Okay. Bram Cohen is now speaking about BitTorrent, a project he's been working on for the past few months.
Hello, everyone. I'm Bram. Thank you. Thank you. So the project I've been working on is BitTorrent, which is built basically on lessons learned from working on Modernation, which I worked on previously, and has a very small amount of code carried over between them. Although I haven't been working on it all that much in the last few weeks, because I've been putting together a conference. BitTorrent is seamlessly web-integrated peer-to-peer downloads. So if the different projects we've been seeing, they handle quite a few different things. It's actually rather notable how no two peer-to-peer projects seem to have quite exactly the same API that they're generating for other people to use. BitTorrent is just the file transfer portion of it. No search whatsoever. And it's very specifically for large popular files that lots of people are downloading. And the UI, are we working? Here, set it up with that thing. The interface is basically seamlessly web integrated. Actually, hold on a second. Oh, I can show the web page now. Check? Okay. All right, so if you go to the URL for it, which is linked to from the CodeCom pages. This is the way most file distribution is done off of an ordinary website. You have a single large large server here in the center, and there are a whole lot of machines downloading from it at the leaves, and you have a whole lot of upload load, which is centralized here in the one central server. Now, the total load is fairly well distributed. A download is distributed pretty much over everyone. However, upload is all at the single central place, which can get very, very expensive. There are lots of very popular, very large files, which lots of people would like to download, but are simply not available because no one can afford the costs of hosting them. And even things like kernel.org are having trouble because of such costs, and all the Linux distributions are designed, their sites are designed to discourage you from downloading the entire CD because it does cost them money. So with BitTorrent, you have the big central server, which could still be fairly big, but now you have peers connecting to each other directly and sending each other pieces of the file. So upload, while there is some coming off of the central server, is pretty much evenly distributed across everyone. And this could, in theory, scale up pretty much indefinitely once you get all the logistical problems worked out. This is the term for this is swarming distribution. Swarming is actually somewhat different from what a lot of things have because they have multi-source downloads where there are multiple servers who have a particular file, and you can download from all of those servers at once. Multi-source downloading is when there are multiple people downloading the same file, and even before, and peers who are downloading, even before they finish downloading the entire file, are capable of sending pieces of that file to other downloaders. So they're downloading and uploading at the same time. And in fact, BitTorrent is very well behaved on the client end in that as soon as it's done downloading, it stops uploading as well and doesn't kind of try and hijack the way your machine behaves in order to get better performance in and of itself, which is kind of nice. So I actually have a very simple demo of this that I can do, which is BitTorrent is seamlessly web integrated. So here I am at a fairly ordinary web page, and this is a fairly ordinary hyperlink. Now I've already installed BitTorrent on this particular machine, so this machine knows. So BitTorrent is technically acting as a helper app here. So this does require some previous installation. But to actually use it, all I do is I click on this hyperlink, and I have to click OK because Mozilla's a buggy piece of crap. I'm serious, that was a bug. All right, and then, wow, worked. Yeah, it worked fast this time. Then I get this save as dialog, much like when I'm downloading any large file. I get a save as dialog, and I'm going to download this in /home/bram/tj.mp3. Gives me a save as dialog, and it starts downloading. Now, I can zoom in here, so there's better view. What's it doing? Okay. I'm going to switch to the localhost demo because that one is working. My server at my house like went down, and we were trying to set up another one, and that didn't seem to be working so good. So here, I'll download from this. That dialogue is irrelevant. It's due to Mozilla being a buggy piece of crap. Okay, so here we are with the save as dialogue again. So save is the same thing. /home/ram/tj.mp3. And this is a procedure users are familiar with. Okay, so now you see it's downloading at a very great rate of speed. And hopefully I'll be able to zoom on this before it's done. So you see there's both a download. So this looks basically like a normal save, except there's both a download rate and an upload rate. And were there other people downloading at the same time and not having serious NAT problems, there would be an upload rate here. One neat feature I have is if I cancel that, and I click on this again, and once more go past the inane Mozilla dialog. And if I say I can resume simply by giving it the exact same file name that it had before. And you see it's now checking existing file, and it started right where it left off because it had already downloaded a significant fraction of the file and picked up where it left off. And now it has, in fact, finished downloading. The way it does that is when it first starts downloading, it pre-allocates the entire file. And as it gets pieces that go into the file, it puts them in various places, in the appropriate places. So that's the entire user interface of it. It very much doesn't really have a user interface. All the real user interface or user interaction gurus all recommend basically the end user not hardly know that there's an interface there at all, and you just never get in their face. And so that's what I'm attempting to do here. In fact, this dialogue used to have quite a bit more information in it, and now it's been consolidated down to just a download rate and an upload rate. And that's pretty much the entire thing. So I'll turn it over to questions now. Yes.
Wait.
Hold on. Wait till you get the mic. Here.
So since half of your user interface is a Mozilla bug, would you mind explaining to us what application type it's trying to find and briefly what's going on there?
The Mozilla bug is an irrelevant piece of crap, like I said, and really it's just supposed to go directly to the save as dialog. That's just something I click through. That is, I believe, it's application/x-bittorrent. And there's a bug in Mozilla where when you have MIME types properly configured, if I believe they're not one of the ones that like the Mozilla people did themselves, it just always asks you what you want to save as, at least under Linux, just because it feels like asking again, even though it's clearly configured to do it a certain way. What? I am not going to comment on the Mozilla development process. Do we have another question?
Yeah. How do you identify the file and what is a equivalent file? Is it just done by the file name itself? If you're doing the integration in the browser, it's just off the link. How do you know that somebody doesn't have a corrupted or bad version of that file?
Okay. BitTorrent very explicitly identifies files. Its concept of file is URL. That's part of being web integrated, is that you inevitably wind up thinking of files as being based on URLs. So when you hit the thing, you get identifying information about the file. Specifically, you get its length and the hashes of subsections of it. If you give it a local file that already exists, it does two things. It checks that the length of the local file is the same as the length of the file that it's told it wants to download. And if those don't match, it says, oh, there's something wrong. And if they do match, it assumes it's the right file and checks each subsection to see if the hash of that subsection as it is on the disk is the same as what it was told it should be. And all the ones which do match up, it figures it has completely. So it is possible, if you were downloading previously, to have part of a piece downloaded, and it wouldn't realize that when it came back up again. But mostly, it like figures out which pieces it already has because their hashes check out. So it can never actually do anything particularly garbled when you do a file resume. Although if you do a file resume over a file that happened to be the exact same length as the other one, and it wasn't actually the same file, it will happily go and overwrite your old file.
So my file is exactly the same.
Everything in BitTorrent all the pieces in BitTorrent have their hash values sent when you do your initial request. And it checks all the hash codes before saying it's done. And in fact, it's very well behaved in that it checks the hash of a particular piece before telling any of its peers that it has that particular piece as well. So you couldn't just introduce some garbled data into the system and have it spread everywhere and have no one's downloads work. It's very defensive that way. Yes?
Yeah. What language is it written in, and what OS does it run on, and what stage is the code in right now?
Okay. BitTorrent is almost entirely written in Python. There's a teeny little bit of crypto written in C, specifically AES encounter mode, just for performance reasons that had to be in C, and it isn't in the standard Python libraries. But basically, the entire thing is written in Python, and this is not actually a performance problem at all, because most of what it does is just, most of the big bulk dealing with stuff it does is string copies. So it doesn't really use up hardly any CPU, even being written entirely in Python. What OSs does it run on? It runs on Linux and Windows. It's pretty easy to install under Unix, although I don't have like debs and RPMs for it. It's just like a three-step process. It's pretty nice. It uses Python's dist utils. The one under Windows is actually yet even nicer. There's this really nice thing called PyTE.exe. So I'm doing this Rube Goldberg thing where I take PyTE.exe to make BitTorrent into an executable, and then I use Nullsoft's installer to make an installer out of that. But the upshot is I have this single executable, which is pretty large. It's 2 megabytes, mostly because of the graphical libraries, which is kind of annoying, because it would be 0.5 megabyte if all it had was the Python interpreter. But I have this single executable, which you download and run, and it just under Windows, it just goes, okay, I'm installed now. And then because it puts stuff in the registry, you actually don't even have to restart Internet Explorer. You can literally hit the click on the link to the executable and tell it to just open it. And then it says, okay, it works now. And then you can click on the other link in that exact same page, which uses BitTorrent, to download, and it'll start downloading. So it's very, very nice under Windows. Oh, and in terms of what's the state of the code, the code is fairly mature. I have this ridiculously huge regression test suite because swarming distribution is really, really tricky to get right. This is a very notable thing, is swarming is really, really technically difficult. The protocols are undocumented but straightforward. They're not hard to figure out reading the code, and I will document them in the future. However, writing a well-behaved BitTorrent peer, just given what the protocols are is a very, very difficult thing to do. And I do not recommend that anyone actually try that. Just like use the Python code or port it, but don't try and do that from scratch. That's an exceedingly subtle activity to do. I mean, just in terms of base getting all the edge cases right, not even the heuristic-y things, which I'm sure someone's going to ask about. In terms of whether there will be any backwards incompatible changes and new things for maturity, there's going to be a backwards incompatible change soon, so to make it possible to download several files at once with a single click on a link, because that's wanted for a lot of applications. And it's really bad when you have a file that's so big it takes up your entire hard drive to download it as, like, it's actually two files. So you download it as a tarball and try and expand it, but the tarball plus the other thing is too big for your hard drive. And that's actually a pretty slow operation when you get into these multi-gigabyte files. Also, as a UI thing, it's much nicer to do several with a single click. Just if you're, like, downloading an album, you want all the tracks at once. In terms of the things that need to be done, I had a test run recently, which went very, very well, and indicated that there's basically one more thing I need to do, which is re-requesting, in order to make it really perform well. And after that's done, it should be able to scale. I'm pretty sure it'll scale well to 100 simultaneous downloaders, except in cases where a lot of the downloaders are behind NAT, which, if anyone asks about, I will be very happy to talk about that at length. So there are basically these two relatively small changes which need to be done to it, and then it'll be really usable, and usable fairly long term. And actually, it might even scale to a lot more than 100 simultaneous downloaders. That's just the amount I have some reasonable amount of confidence it'll handle well. And I assume some new engineering thing will happen at that point. By the way, I'm currently looking for work, because I've been working full... I've been... Thank you. I'm sure many others of you here are looking for work as well. Although I've actually been working full-time on BitTorrent for the last nearly a year. And other than those two changes to really get it working nicely at this point, I'm probably not going to do any more work on it unless someone pays me. And actually, this is a product which can save lots of companies real money in hosting costs very quickly, and not just the cost of bandwidth, which are quite significant, but the cost of administration of lots and lots of machines when you're running a huge server farm. And there are lots of things to be done, including putting really nice programmatic interfaces on it and other stuff, which is in the to-do list in it, which would be really nice to have done, and I will probably have to get a day job and not work on it unless someone is willing to pay me to work on that stuff. Okay, I think I'm ready for the next question.
How does this differ from Swarmcast?
This is very similar to Swarmcast in many ways. I'm actually not really sure on the... Okay, right. Okay, there's some notable technical differences. Like, this does not have any forward error correction. Also, Swarmcast works as an alternative, that if someone installs Swarmcast and hits a URL handled by Swarmcast, then the Swarmcast system will go, oh, that's in Swarmcast, and go and download via Swarmcast. And it'll just download via HTTP for everyone else. While with BitTorrent, if you don't have BitTorrent installed, your download just doesn't work. I think that's actually a pretty big win, technically, in some ways. I think BitTorrent is quite a bit more... quite a bit more technically mature than Swarmcast is, and also I believe is being somewhat more actively maintained. Swarmcast, I believe, I could be totally wrong on this, is currently mostly being supported to C++ and doesn't really have much new features and hasn't had the same kind of real-world testing as BitTorrent has. Although BitTorrent hasn't had all that much. I've basically had two really significant real-world trial runs. The first one I had five... Well, maybe three. The first time I did it, I just downloaded from one machine to another and found out that I was having a really obscure TCP backoff problem, and I implemented pipelining properly, which is not easy to do, and that went away. And then I had another trial run where there were five simultaneous downloaders, and ran into this whole long list of technical problems and had to completely rework my tit-for-tat heuristics. And I recently got all that finished and did another trial run with 6 simultaneous downloaders, and that time it didn't even break a sweat. It just chomped through and worked great. That's about all I know about that.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
How do you handle out-of-order packets and, let's say, a broken download where you have several packets out of order and there are holes, you know, like you've got a fragmented file?
Yeah.
And then if you have to transfer a lot of those, like request this piece, how much additional bandwidth does that add to the overall download?
Yeah. BitTorrent does not download a file in order. It has no real concept of a file being a stream that you're pulling down from somewhere. It just downloads pieces in random order and saves them to the appropriate place within the pre-allocated file as it gets them. The protocol is basically one of you connect to your peers, and once you're connected to a peer or they connect to you, this is now a bilateral connection. And the protocol is one of either side can say, I have this piece or these pieces, and give a list of hashes of pieces that you have. And there's a query saying, give me this byte range of this piece. And the other side has a message saying, here is this byte range of this piece. This does not have very much extra overhead at all in terms of the size of these messages, because the actual pieces it sends are typically 32K, and the overhead of that stuff around it is very small in comparison. So it's actually a very efficient protocol. And it's encrypted in counter mode, which hardly changes anything at all from a utility standpoint. And was that the whole question? Okay. Next question?
Bram?
Yeah.
Over here. Justin Chepwesky is on IRC, and he's asked me to ask you, why does the resume depend on selecting the same destination file? Shouldn't it work simply because you're getting the same file metadata from the website, especially since you use a secure hash to identify the file? Also, they're curious about the use of the pronunciation URL as opposed to URL or URL.
With regards to the second one, URL is one syllable and URL is 3. With regards to the first question, BitTorrent actually doesn't have any persistent data between its invocations whatsoever. As far as it's concerned, you're giving it its one task to do across its entire existence, which is download this one particular file and save it to this one particular place on disk. And it doesn't try and do any greater management of all your downloads. One could write something that cached that sort of information and was more intelligent about it and didn't give you the save as dialogue the second time, but I haven't done that. Another question.
Graham, quick questions.
Yeah.
One, does the user have any sense of whether they are connected or not connected? I assume when you click for the first time, it launches the helper app. Does the app then stay active and the user in sharing mode until when? Is there any interface for the user to opt to disconnect or connect? And the second question is, how easy would it be to spoof, you know, to redirect users to basically create some sort of a DDoS machine out of this?
Okay. For the first question, it's downloading as long as it tells you it's downloading. And the entire time it's downloading, it will accurately represent what its upload rate is. Actually, the UI you just saw is the one in CVS, which is a little bit nicer than the one you get if you download the demo right now. That one's a little bit more confusing. But the one I showed is the one that it will be in the next release. And as soon as it's done downloading the entire file, it stops uploading right then, and it's done with. It's very well behaved that way, and that's a really big user interface win from this very technically difficult thing to do of swarming downloads. And what was the second question again? Spoofing possibilities. Your initial HTTP request gets all the unique identifying information for the file as a whole. So it's just as spoofable or non-spoofable as HTTP is or HTTPS is if the initial request is launched from an HTTPS request.
You said that the user interface was actually pretty basic.
Yeah.
Is there any thought to actually restoring like a more complex user interface for like us geeks that actually want to know what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm actually a geek who really knows everything that's happening in the system and can understand everything when I'm watching it go and stuff. And I found I actually really like looking at the simpler thing more. Yeah. Yeah. It may at some point in the future have a detail mode that can be swapped on and off. Actually, it probably will. That just happens to not be there right now. Yeah, sure.
You were going to explain about NAT?
What?
You were going to explain about NAT?
NAT. Oh, NAT, yes. So as I said before the presentation yesterday about NAT, NAT is the bane of peer-to-peer systems. What BitTorrent does for NAT is if someone's behind NAT and someone isn't behind NAT, the person who is behind NAT can connect to the person who isn't behind NAT, and then you get this bilateral connection, which really has no sense of one side is a server and the other side is the client. It's just this bilateral thing. So the whole system can work quite well as long as a reasonably small fraction of everyone is behind NAT. And it may be that at some point in the future, some of those interesting hacks to do to instantiate TCP connections between DirectNAT will be created. And there's some other interesting possibilities, like Plug and Play has these features where you can basically use your NAT box as a plug and play device and say, hey, I want to start listening on this port. And it'll tell you, OK, you're now listening on this port and this machine, it's getting forwarded to you. Without that, what may happen if you have a lot of people behind NAT or even unfortunately, if everyone's behind DSL because of all these ridiculous asymmetric connections everyone has, if even a pretty significant fraction of everyone is behind NAT, you can run into a situation where you have every time someone who isn't behind NAT connects, they are soon afterwards connected to behind all these poor saps who are in the NAT grotto, who are desperately trying to download the entire file but have been completely incapable of getting the entire thing. All those people are trying to get the person who isn't behind NAT to upload to them, so they all immediately start uploading to him. He finishes his download real nice and fast and really doesn't even return all that much because his upload is probably a lot less than his download because lots and lots of people have really ridiculous upload-download difference ratios because they've got ADSL. And so he finishes his download real fast and he goes away. And each new person who's trying to download and is also behind NAT runs into the exact same problem. This problem will probably become quite acute after BitTorrent really starts getting used. I think this is really, this will be a measure of its success that I'm the first person to have gotten a project to the point where this problem really starts being noticeable in exactly what it is, where it's gotten to the point where the fundamental difficulty of this people not being able to connect to each other problem really starts to show. I'm really hoping either IPv6 fixes this or some of these other solutions happen to fix this problem, because otherwise you have this fundamental problem that it is simply impossible for there to be even a vaguely equitable distribution of upload load and people behind NAT to still get their downloads happening. You have to actually force all the people who aren't behind NAT to upload vastly more than they download in order for there to be any equity, especially once the problem starts happening.
I have two questions that are somewhat related. I've noticed that using TTCP to test my connection rate, that my connection rate in either direction is affected by what I'm doing in the other direction. And the other question I have, it might actually solve some of your problems in BitTorrent if you insisted that everybody upload just as much as they download before they get to disconnect.
So that second one is a matter of policy. One could hack the client to be friendly about that and just stay up and uploading. And one could do an even lesser thing of not stop uploading altogether the instant you stop downloading and just leave the dialog up and continue uploading until the person says, okay, cancel, and probably be nicer about it and telling them the ratio between how much they've downloaded and uploaded over time. You can't really force that thing on the user. I don't believe in forcing those things on the user. But yes, that could be done, and it would be nice. And people who want to be friendly could do that. And it's also a nice, cheap way of actually acting as a server. If you want to act as a server for a file, you can just run that, and you don't have to run the publisher and such. And what was the first question again? Oh, right. The problems in either direction. There is a lot of very technically interesting slash scary buffering awareness pipelining voodoo going on within the heart of BitTorrent, which makes it so that it actually is capable of utilizing a connection in both directions at once quite nicely and still shoving its control codes down before its bulk data transfers go down. Many net connections, either purposefully or accidentally or willfully incompetently, have the property that if you upload a lot from them, their download degrades as well. And typically, if you simply change some configuration parameters and to unbreak how like a DSL line is working on its router, those sorts of problems will go away. However, many ISPs don't like people running servers and kind of willfully and incompetently leave these things as they are. Although those sorts of behaviors aren't inside BitTorrent, they're just TCP stuff in general. Next question.
Heuristics?
Heuristics. Oh. There's an interesting tit-for-tat sort of thing in BitTorrent. You want to have the property... Well, there are a few things you want to have. You want it to discover and utilize better connections better, so that if someone is on your own LAN, you're sending to them. Or if someone is behind an equivalently fast connection to you, you mostly send and receive from them. And you also want it to have the property that really does utilize its full net connection at all times. So in many things, if you're just downloading from one person, you might be downloading from someone who has a much slower connection than you. Or with BitTorrent, you actually want to upload efficiently. And if you upload to just one person, there's a chance you might be uploading to a very slow person. And BitTorrent does this interesting tit-for-tat thing, which is very loosely based in, well, inspired by, I guess, lessons learned trying to do a currency system inside Mojo Nation. And a currency system is very, all kinds of technical problems inside of a currency system. So initially, BitTorrent had this balance-based thing. Its general approach is, I, as a peer, just download from whoever will let me download from them. And I upload to a fixed number of people at once. The default is 4. So my whole strategy has to do with trying to upload to people who I am getting good download from. And I switch off which 4 people I let download from me from time to time. In order to control this. Previously, I had this based on a balance-based thing where it kept track of the difference between what it's uploaded and downloaded from each of its peers over the entire lifetime of their speaking to each other. This caused all sorts of problems, generally stemming from the fact that this was taking into account too much historical information. When I want to download something from someone right now, I want to know their capacity for sending to me right now, not long historical information about what happened in the past. So currently, it's all based on what my current download rate is from everyone. So what it does is it takes all of its peers and has a priority list of them, from highest priority to lowest priority. And the 4 people in highest priority who are interested in something I have, I let download from me. Now, once every 30 seconds, I look at these 4 people and look at my download rate from them, and the one who's giving me the least, I take him and put him in last priority, and keep doing this once every 30 seconds or so. So in practice, when there are lots and lots of peers, what this should wind up doing, and I've seen this work quite nicely on a small scale, is I have 3 pretty much permanent connections. I have these three bilateral connections where I'm both uploading and downloading continuously, which basically just stay up. We've got a good connection to each other, and I keep uploading, and he keeps downloading, and we never choke each other. That's the technical term it uses for stopping a connection completely. We never choke each other because we're both getting a good rate up. And there's a floater, which is I'm trying out a new person and rotating him once every 30 seconds until I find a connection that's possibly better than one of these others, at which point he becomes the floater. Although there's no explicit concept of floater programmed in, that's just sort of what kind of happens naturally. And this seems to work very, very well in practice, and was the most, from a writing research paper standpoint, the most interesting portion of the entire thing, but is actually a very small portion of the code base as a whole. And there's lots of other stuff, which is sort of looked down on by academics as being mere implementation details, but is actually very technically difficult to do and interesting when it comes down to it, that it does. But that's how the heuristics in it work. Next question.
So lead in from that to sort of the question that dare not be asked in peer-to-peer, which is that if the economics of the last mile market have caused to be built a lot of asymmetric connections and also shared pipe connections and so on, is peer-to-peer really the right architecture for distributing information if that's what has been the economical kind of last mile to build?
Andrew Odlisko has some very interesting writings about this. When telephones were first created, they were also viewed as mostly a way in which people could get information from central places, and it was thought of very much as a content system. And there were all these setups where people could call places to find out what the current weather was and find out information and things like that. And they actually had pricing schemes for telephones to try and discourage people calling each other directly because those were viewed as useless calls. And he actually does put this in quotes on his page. And I assume someone back then working for a phone company actually said that these were useless calls and wanted to discourage them because they were looked down on. It's quite possible that a very similar thing is happening already socially with the internet, which is there was this whole phrase being bandied about a few years ago that content is king. And of course, all the big content sites, or almost all of them, have gone under now, and even the remaining ones like City Search are really having trouble, while the internet is still booming because people really like using AOL Instant Messenger. People like chatting with each other and connecting to each other directly. And it may be that much the same thing will happen with bandwidth. And I think the prevalence of asymmetric lines, and particularly the economics of trying to encourage people to have asymmetric lines instead of symmetric lines, even though the marginal cost isn't all that much different, is rather short-sighted. He says cable companies claim it's inherent in their plan. It just makes so much... BitTorrent, like, a swarming distribution makes so much sense from an economic standpoint. I find it really hard to imagine that it won't become really common in the not-too-distant future. And the ISPs, I don't know, maybe a lot of ISPs will really start to burn when their customers actually start uploading a lot of stuff in the meantime. And it looks like it may be a painful process of people like getting their net connections configured properly so they actually can upload and download at once, and getting the pricing changed and making it so that not so many people are behind NAT and all that stuff. But I think there will be an inevitable trend towards actually letting peer-to-peer systems work a lot better. Although, yes, it's not happening all that much yet.
Yeah, I have two questions. What is the life cycle of BitTorrent? How does it start up and how does it shut down? Mm-hmm. And the second one is, could I do something like start up BitTorrent from init and have it running while my system's, you know, as part of my run level?
Okay. BitTorrent has three parts. One of them is a web server. It's called the tracker. That's the thing you make your initial HTTP request to. The one that there are lots of, is downloaders. They're just peers. And the last one is the way that the server makes its stuff available, which is called the publisher. When you make a file or files available in BitTorrent, you run both a tracker and a publisher, or publishers. And in fact, multiple publishers can use the same tracker. The tracker is a very lightweight web server, which basically, whenever someone makes a request, it says, well, here's a list of other people who have this, and then people announce their existence to it. So I hit you, the tracker, and you tell me, here, start downloading from these people, and then I announce to you, hey, I'm downloading as well. You can give out my information to other people. The tracker has very low load, hardly takes up any CPU, hardly takes up any bandwidth. You could have a single tracker for huge numbers of things. Then you have publishers, which look to peers like peers, except they never go down, and they have the entire file. And that's how you make the content available and make sure that it continues being available. So it's the initial source and the continued availability of the file. So you run one of those, and that one just sits there making sure that the whole thing is always available. So when a single person downloads, if I'm downloading from you, I hit you, you point me to your publisher, I connect to the publisher, and this is what we just saw here. I download from the publisher almost exactly the same as if it were a regular HTTP connection with this minuscule extra overhead added for what's going on. However, as soon as two downloaders are downloading, I hit you and connect to the publisher, the other person hits you, and you tell him about both me and the publisher, because I announced myself to you after I started my download. He connects to me and the publisher. Then what starts happening is we're both downloading from the publisher and both sending to each other continuously. And there's an immediate win in bandwidth savings for the server right then. And this scales up and down really nicely. It works just great when there's only one downloader and works just great when there are hundreds of downloaders. Next question.
Hi.
I don't know who has the mic.
I do. BitTorrent's working over HTTP, so therefore over TCP, and it is well...
BitTorrent actually, its initial request is HTTP. Things talk to the tracker over using HTTP, but the peers speak to each other and speak to the publisher via its own protocol. Because what that protocol needs to do simply could not be shoehorned into HTTP.
But it's over TCP, right?
It is over TCP, yeah. And in fact, it's very well behaved about that. The entire thing uses TCP as a black box. I do not set a TCP option anywhere, and I just use select.
So my point was that, well, it's well known that over TCP, especially as you increase file size and distance, throughput falls off, you get higher latency. Add loss to that, you don't have any reliability scheme, FEC, for example.
I don't think you're right about that one.
Well, can I just finish
my
point?
I mean, people download everything via TCP, and it works just fine. When you just are downloading a file, even when there's higher latency and high loss rates, TCP does a pretty good job of pretty much filling your whole pipe and downloading from that.
My point was, as it sounded like you're targeting larger file sizes and particularly higher concurrencies. And as you move up in file size, throughput over TCP does fall off. You add
no,
to
no,
that
no, no,
some
the,
loss.
The throughput is still fine. It takes longer because it's a larger file.
Right.
But you're getting the same throughput you always were.
Well,
and it's being very well behaved with regards to TCP because it only has several connections going at once. If it had 1,000 connections simultaneously that was downloading over, that might cause TCP to have all sorts of problems. But as long as I'm only uploading and downloading via 4 connections at once, chances are what's going to happen is if things go up too much and start getting some loss, they'll do TCP back off. And there's a small enough number of connections that there isn't a huge amount of noise here, and TCP will be able to do its job on all that congestion control, which there's been all this research done on making that
work
well.
Right, of course. This all works if you're not approaching high concurrency situations. But my point was that there's a lot of work that's been done on FEC over UDP, which can scale up to concurrencies that are orders of magnitude higher than what you're talking about. And I just wanted to get a sense for, if in fact you are targeting high concurrency downloads.
I don't think I would actually gain anything out of high concurrency downloads because the goal is to fill up your entire pipe. And the reason to have multiple connections going at once is so that you can let TCP do its work of load balancing across them and making sure that you're using your whole pipe at once. If I have a ridiculously faster connection than everyone else, then just having a handful of connections going might not work so well for me. However, I sort of assume that I don't have four times as much bandwidth as all of my peers, so I upload to four people at once, and chances are I'm going to be allowed to download from about four people at once. And having a very high concurrency thing where everyone is sending to everyone else simultaneously wouldn't be a win in terms of transfer rate, because the bottleneck is the transfer capacity at the endpoints, the size of their pipes.
Next. Okay, this should probably be the last question.
Okay.
This is a relay from IRC. Is there any reason why BitTorrent couldn't evolve to become a full-fledged proxy web server that is capable of eliminating the slashdot effect from websites, and what would be required to do this?
There are... The smaller the files you're dealing with, the more technical weird overhead there is. File transfers of very large files are nice and well-behaved, that they're... that they take a while, you can set up a connection and start transferring and keep transferring for a while and stuff. So BitTorrent really doesn't really work at all that well for very small files. It mostly works for big files. However, if you have a website that has a bunch of large files on it and you're worried about getting slashdotted, mostly you're worried about the handful of large files. So if you have a large file, if you have a website that isn't dynamic and has a couple of large files, not thousands of large files, because then you don't get the same people downloading the same stuff at once. But if you have only a couple large files or only a couple really popular large files and the others aren't accessed all that much, so you do have multiple people getting these exact same files at the exact same time, you can, just with forcing your clients to install BitTorrent software, obviously, just pretty easily move it over so that those large files are being distributed via BitTorrent. And it just works. And I believe that was our last question, so I'm done for now.